this is Tell Me Your Story, but I think we're going to have to do a reset.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And it happens that you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Hey, you know, sometimes things happen and you just have to, as I have learned in the computer age, if it isn't working, reboot it. And in a matter of speaking, that's going to be the subject of our program today. But before we get to that, I want to let you know that we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we link to our guests. I'll be giving you that email address in just a little bit. But it is really true that there are times when, you know, things are just kind of, they're moving along, sailing along, doing great. And then all of a sudden it's not working and we're trying to figure out what the heck happened and why, and we're trying to get the answers while we're also trying to, get things started again. And we're going to be talking about that in reference to your life. Life Reset is the title of the book, The Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want, with Fujian Zane. Fujian, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today. Thank you for taking so much time out.
Oh, of course. Hello to you and all of your audience and listeners, and I'm joyous to be with you.
You know, I wish that there was that proverbial red reset button, that all we had to do was push it and it would just reset everything, and then we could just kind of pick up and move forward and have a great life and not have to worry about a lot of this stuff. But it doesn't really exist, at least not as far as I am aware, and unless you found something that we don't know about.
I didn't find the button, but I found the process. And it's not as quick as the button. And I know that we want everything really quick, but this is the quickest I've found throughout the 25 years that I've been a psychotherapist and a coach. This has come to be the fastest. So I'll be glad to tell you the path that I figured out.
Well, we're going to talk about that as well as your path and how you came to discover this, as it were. Again, it is Life Reset. That is the title of the work that we're talking about. And you also have a web address. The web address is Fujian, that's Foojan.com, Foojan.com, where you can certainly get additional information. You can contact her as well directly and maybe get further guidance beyond this interview as to what to do next. I would have to say or ask you this, Fujian, and that is that this is along the same lines of trying to find one's life purpose, if you will. And that seems to be a big issue today. And one of the, shall we say, solutions, I think that's the right word, or at least one of the elements of the solution, has to do with this concept that I've been hearing now for maybe the last couple, 3 years, mindfulness. I know it's been around a lot longer than that. Is that part of the key?
It really helps because I think that we're the only species that is aware of ourselves and can be aware, and we're even aware that we're aware. So we can go beyond what is just given to us genetically and biologically. You know, we make up a lot of stories with our head. We create a lot of just the creation. We are such a creative species, and we can look at all the technology we've created. So utilizing the same concept upon us and looking at how we think, how we feel, how we behave, being responsible for those pieces. A lot of us think that this just comes naturally and automatically and we have no control over it, but we certainly do. We have control over the areas of thoughts and emotions and behaviors that we tend to focus on. There might be a lot of thoughts during the day, but there's certainly ones that we focus on. They're ones that we keep repeating, same as emotion and same as behavior. But you know, those impact us and the world. And if we become responsible and accountable about those pieces, then we can shift and change. Does that take mindfulness? Absolutely. It helps, because as we become really proficient in the awareness process, which helps to mindfulness, then we know where the keys are to keep shifting and changing instantaneously to create the results that we want.
I think one of the things that we might want to maybe define for folks, because everybody has a little different definition, and that has to do with the aspect that you use the word success. Mm-hmm. And it means a lot of different things to a lot of people. Can you give us your definition under this context of the life reset?
Where you are fulfilled in what it is that you're doing and what you've created, and that other people who are around you are also giving you back the feedback that they are also fulfilled in relatedness with you. So, and then to have that in almost all areas of your life. So the process that the book takes people is actually go through the process of kind of evaluating every area of your life, such as career, such as finances, such as your relatedness with yourself, with your family, with your children, with your intimate relationship, with sexuality, with God, with death, with all of the areas that we come across during our lifetime and life path, and anytime you are right now. You know, we're multifaceted human beings. We're consistently in relationships with ourselves and the world. And are we fulfilled in those relationships? And everybody can define their own. So I don't give people, there's one way of handling success or being fulfilled is what makes you fulfilled. But Richard, you know, sometimes we'll say, well, I'm happy with who I am. And then if I go interview 20 people around you, and they might not be happy with the things you do up to them, or that you're not being responsible. So the fulfillment needs to take a little bit of a more of a responsibility and accountability beyond just us, because we're not panda bears. We live with other people.
Well, that is true. I've used the analogy many, many times on this program that if the good Lord had intended for all of us to live on separate planets, individual lives, certainly there are plenty of Class M planets that we could do that. How we would be dispersed in that regard. However, the reality is, guess where we all are? Here.
Yes.
And
together.
Exactly. So that kind of, from a logical perspective, dictates that maybe we're supposed to find a way to get along and work together. I don't know about you. I mean, my upbringing here in the United States, I've observed the progression of humanity. And it has been slow, lethargic. I mean, and someone was like, oh, what are you talking about? Look at the innovations in technology. No, no, no. What you don't seem to realize is, I think, this is just my observation, these are just tools to be doing the same things we've been doing for centuries, communicating, maybe, you know, writing or connecting. I mean, we're using the computer right now, you and I, to have a conversation here, to enlighten people as to where you're coming from. But hey, you know what? Back in the Roman days, you and I would be sitting up on some stage in the center of, say, the Colosseum, speaking very loudly so everyone could hear us and having the same conversation. So we really haven't, you know, in that context, and we still travel from point A to point B. Now we just have different means to do that. Maybe when we start to transport, if that ever technology ever comes about, converting matter to energy and back to matter again, those kinds of things. You know, it just seems to me that in spite of all of those, I'll call them innovations in the various processes of human existence, there is an aspect of our lives that we all share in common. You were born and raised in Iran, correct?
Yes, I was born in Iran. I came here when I was 12 and a half. I went to Arizona into a boarding school, and then been living here since, and have experienced different cultures, and being born in one culture, but being also adapted to different cultures. I totally agree with you that every innovation that we've created is a tool to create a more efficiency or proficiency about our needs. But it seems like human needs have stayed the same throughout the years. And as we go along through even different cultures, human need is almost the same. The need for relatedness, the need for security, safety, love, the knowing that I'm significant, that I'm someone that I can be useful to the world. And all of those pieces are so important that we want the safety, but we also want innovation. We want novelty. We will get it bored. So we want, different games. We want authority. We want to dominate, but we don't want to be dominated. I mean, these are needs, human needs that have gone across the spectrum and cultures. We just figured out different games to play each one of them with.
Yeah.
And the technology has helped us to do that.
Yeah.
The only piece that I've come with, again, 25 years of being sitting with people, having the privilege of people taking me into their lives and into their stories, is that rarely we take full responsibility for at least ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really, really cool if we did. Maybe we could take responsibility for our own needs versus dumping it on others constantly and just blaming other people and waiting, even if we don't blame, if we're passive about waiting for other people to give us those needs. And it seems like no matter how we go and how much we make life easier with technology, the rate of depression and anxiety for humanity keeps going higher and higher. So it's like, what is the component of that? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes from just not taking ownership and responsibility about the part of life that we could. I'm not suggesting that we're in control of all life. Mm-hmm. I totally get it all day that I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But the area that I can be is important for me to be responsible and accountable. So first of all, I am in my actions. I am in control of my communication. I am even in control of the way I think and feel because it relates to the action. I'm really in control of the way I like to perceive whatever people say to me about me or, do toward me. Those are pieces that I can be. And those pieces help me minimize those kind of depression and anxiety, which is rising all over the world.
Well, it's interesting that you use that word, because when I was working for 15 years at a Christian radio station, the dirtiest word you could ever utter was personal responsibility. And I always thought, and this was a wonderful example someone shared with me, you can't be a little pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. You're either responsible
yes.
or you're not. And you cannot say that the devil is responsible for the bad things that happen to me and God is responsible for the good things that happen to me, because now you're nothing more than a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you don't understand. And I personally don't believe that.
Right.
And yet at the same time, taking into context what you've already stated about how, we're not in control of all the elements of our lives. And yet there is a metaphysical concept or principle here of the concept of the law of attraction, although it's really funny. You hear about the law of attraction, like attracts like, and then you also hear the phrase, and opposites attract. So it's like, it doesn't matter. You're going to attract all kinds of stuff to you. But that right. then the question is, what is it that you want to attract to you? And I have to dive into this area, because maybe here's an area that we haven't innovated yet. And yet you and I, through this conversation, I hope, have a greater understanding of one another and where the other is coming from. And that's kind of the bottom line. One of the reasons why I perceive the majority, if not all, of the conflicts that we have going on today, that have been going on for centuries in other parts of the world, centuries, folks, is because these people refuse, out of their own pride, in my opinion, to sit down and dialogue and find out where the other is coming from.
Yes.
And I have to say that I've been very, very curious over the years about the multitude of philosophies, is what I call them, that exist around the world and have been for centuries. I can research just about any philosophy that I want whether it be Christianity and its relative sects, Buddhism, Hinduism. There's one right now in the world that I want to research, but believe it or not, I don't know about other people, I'm a little afraid to, and that's Islam. Mm-hmm. And yet I want to know, what's this all about? And I find more people are more open to one another when they have that conversation about where the other's coming from. There's a great little, there was a program that was on not too long ago, my wife and I were watching, where this group of U.S. Military had come ashore, but they were then attacked by another group. And the premise of the initial attack was because they said, well, your military came here and gave us this antidote for this virus, and it killed all of our people.
Wow.
And they said, well, wait a minute. That was not us. Okay, we don't know who that was, and we will find out. And so anyway, they began to dialogue. They captured this individual who had sanctioned the attack, and they began to dialogue with this gentleman. And they began to find out why he was so enraged, why he was seeking out revenge for his people. And it calmed him down. It calmed the other side down. Neither side was right or wrong. They just now had a better understanding of where the other was coming from.
Exactly.
And I thought, why haven't we been able to do that in the Middle East in particular, and let alone elsewhere in the world?
I think we have it as a protection for us is to use our anger and fight. While a lot of times protection for all of us in a bigger game is that understanding of understanding the other side, because then we can protect all of us versus I protect myself against you and go to self-preservation right at the beginning, which is me against you, because me against you, ultimately 50% of us or more percent of us are going to go away. And then there's what's left is going to go towards self-preservation again. And, you know, they're going to kill and fight each other. That's all that it's going to be, unless we look at the bigger picture, which is the understanding, compassion for all the differences that we all have. Like you said, I've experienced different cultures and I've experienced different religions. Mm-hmm. I was born in a Muslim country. My family had different religions. I went to a Catholic school, Jeanne d'Arc school, French Catholic school. So, and then, you know, I came to the United States and then I've, you know, studied all the religions. So I saw the different aspects of it, but to also, from my own experience, I came from a family who, you know, my parents were divorced when I was very early on, and then they sent me alone to another country. I was subjected to, you know, sexual abuse for many, many years. And I came to a country where it was just me. At age 12, I went to high school. I was one of the whiz kids. So I came out of the high school at age 15 and I went to ASU. They gave away my dorm. So at 15, I had to figure out how to survive all of it. And it was interesting in how the person who I was that in my head had said, I can't trust anybody. I can't trust men. I can't trust, you know, my parents. I can't trust anybody in the world. I was in a space that the only thing I could do, Richard, was trust blindly to the world for them to take care of me. I didn't know how to take care of myself at 12 and a half. Yeah. I needed to trust the world to take care of me. And it did. It did. I started working. I started working 3 jobs. I put myself to school. I got my doctorate. And I started giving back to the world in a way that I could. But the piece that I really got through the years were I could be pissed at my mother and father and keep that resentment and consistently tell them. I could be pissed at all the men who abused me and then, you know, really ruin all of my relationship. Mm. I could be pissed at the world for any aspect that it was rageful. And not that I wasn't for a long time, but what was the purpose? Yeah. Like, what was the use? I could ruin myself, ruin all my relationships and be that, or I could do a life reset, be responsible. And I remember for the first classes that I went, and they said, you're responsible for your results. And I kept looking, and I was like 20 years of age, and I kept looking like, who, me? What do you think? I was born in this family, and they got divorced, and they did this, and it wasn't me. And, you know, I fought it completely, that I'm the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, slowly but surely, it's like, okay, and how's that going to help me?
Yeah.
How is that going to be for me to be victim of the world? Whether I'm victim of one religion or a victim of one population or a victim of one race or one group or one man or one woman, what is that going to do for me? Is that going to make me successful or fulfilled in life? Or I'm just going to be miserable throughout my life, being depressed, being anxious, feeling out of control all the time. So it was those kind of shifts, which slowly but surely I shifted, and I saw my clients shift, which was, you know, I can be in control of that piece. I might not be in the control of everybody else or the rest of the world, but I can certainly be in control of what I create for my life and the ones at least around me in my relationships.
As the phrase goes, be the peace that you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking with Fujian Zane. She's the author of Life Reset, The Awakening Integration Path to, I beg your pardon, The Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life That You Want. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we are going to continue here. We hope you'll stay with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are talking with Fujian Zane, and she's the author of Life Reset. And it was just a little tongue-in-cheek, so to speak, at the beginning of the program when I created a fictitious problem with our music here that I wanted to play with that a little bit, because I think it's a good example of, again, the way that we often perceive things, Fujian, and I find it fascinating too. You know, I have been aware of individuals in my life, the people who I have surrounded myself with, who have other families, and those family members, relatives, acquaintances, begin the process of dying off, transitioning, as I like to call it. And yet at the same time, you know, they say, well, yeah, you know, my whole family, all my siblings and my parents are still alive. And I don't know what that's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain element, I guess, to be honest, there is a certain element of detachment that I've sort of created. Maybe as a protection, because I see my parents more as friends, less as parents these days.
Right.
And which I think is pretty nice. I mean, you know, if you're able to see your folks as friends and not just those people who raised you and disciplined you, you know. And I have fairly good relationships with my brother and sisters. I don't know too many of the aunts and uncles and the cousins and nephews and nieces and so forth. Although I am a great uncle. One of my sister's daughters has two children, and now my parents are great grandparents. Which is, and they're actually helping to raise them, which is really extraordinary. But you know, we are, when someone passes, you know, you never know exactly what to say. You know, I'm sorry for your loss. You know, my condolences, et cetera, et cetera. Which really, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, you, that's one of the phrases I've heard. Don't use that one, because you didn't do it. But yet at the same time, you want to show empathy.
Yes.
for someone's loss. And I sit here looking, going, well, yeah, but I've been learning on this program in particular and through the people that I have met through my metaphysical search and my journey, that this is, you know, it's not the end. It's just a part of the whole process. And I guess I try to mentally keep that in context. And so I wish it were possible to roll this thing forward and say, oh, that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did have one dear friend who lived with us in our home. My wife and I had him living with us for a few months, and he passed in our home. And that was a very strange. And I remember one evening, or we were laying there, and I just got angry, and I just started yelling. They said, "How dare you?" You know, da da da. And I became the observer at the same time, going, "Where in the heck is this coming from?" You know, is it enough? And because that's an extreme example, but is it really enough to just change one's awareness or perspective?
My mom right now is in a coma in ICU. So the conversation you're having is something that I've been going through for the past couple of months. And it's an interesting place to be with life and death in that way. I think that when we face death, whether it's our own or anybody else, that we create a different appreciation for life. Nobody knows what happens afterward. There's a lot of philosophies, a lot of belief systems. And I think that, you know, we change through our years and what belief system and philosophy can be accurate. And I don't know if anybody knows what is accurate. People make up their own accuracy or their own expression and impression, whatever it feels good to them to feel safe to the other world. Some people see it as the end and then they make whatever it is right here and think that I have only a certain time, so let me give as much as I can. Some people fear not being anymore, so they create the notion of there's something beyond. And it might be, and it might not be. I don't know. But how can I shift the way that I am here? I've gone through many years of this spiritual journey. And at one point I told myself, well, I came here in this name, with this parent, in this body, and with some essence of destiny as is, not all of it, but, you know, choosing this parent, with these formats and, you know, choosing, for example, to be born in Iran, all of those, whether it was my choice or not, it was something that it's here now and I have to manage this one. I'm sure when I die, I'll manage then, wherever I go, whatever I face, because I don't know how to manage unknown from here. So might as well, I'm here. Let me manage this if I can. And then I would bring my sense to who is here and what's important to me. What is it that I want to experience every day? And when the day I'm gone, what is it that I want to be said about me? And how many people did I impact? What did I do and how did I impact them? What do I want them to say if they had one moment with me? What would they say about me? Sometimes it happens, like, you know, I'm not aware or I'm pissed or I'm completely intrigued with something else and someone calls me or I'm, you know, at a Starbucks or something. I'm not my best in relatedness with the human being that is in front of me. And then I go away and I'm like, well, if the last chance of ever connecting to this human being, how did I leave it off? Was I present? Did I look at them in their eyes? Or was the Starbucks person only a hand that was, it was an object? You know, it could have been a robot. I didn't even look at them. Were there a human being there? And those are the questions. And I'm not, you know, suggesting that there's a right answer to any of it. It's more of, can I be more present about being a human being, living among other human beings, mm-hmm. and knowing that I'm not an object and they're not? Mm-hmm. And if I come from that space, I will consistently be doing the life reset button onto my own, you know, wherever you want to put it in your forehead, and somehow keep pushing yourself and saying, oh, what about this moment? Who's in front of me? Who are they? The wealth of information, the wealth of being that this person has, the wealth of being that I have, that I can share. Can I be all of that? Am I sharing my best, or am I just sharing my assholeness and jerkiness? What am I sharing? And what am I requesting for other people? What am I bringing out in other people? Like, if I bring out my anger, am I going to bring out another person's anger? If I bring out my love, am I going to bring out theirs? And to this moment, I think those are the concept of the life reset, that at any moment, the reset button can be yours from your own experience. I'm not responsible for anybody else's experience, but at least I know that if I'm angry with someone, there's probably a higher chance to get people's anger back as a mirror effect.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
So let's talk about doing a life reset, and maybe we'll keep it simple by saying that a particular event, an event has happened. Let's just say, because it'll only happen in the moment. It'll only be once. It's not going to continue to repeat moment after moment after moment, such as your example of, you're dealing, for example, with your mother's condition. But let's say someone loses a job. Okay. Yeah. And that's, boom, it happened. I just lost my job. Where do I start? And then added to that, I'm assuming that with this life reset for the lost job, part of this is working to stay out of the emotions, because, man, it's easy to get trapped in all of that.
Mm-hmm. So one way of looking at it is looking at, what do I think about my job, about my coworkers, about my boss, about everything that was there? How do I feel about all of it? And then just go ahead and write it or talk it out and record it. Just let it out. Let myself, from all sides of me, to kind of purge all of that. Then I'm going to look at, how was I? Well, how did I behave in the way that I was with my boss or coworkers? How did I honestly behave throughout the years that I created this? And then what was the impact that I had with all of the ways that I was thinking and feeling and behaving to create this result? And then I will go to the next level, because all of human beings project. We all also live in our own projection of how other people think of me. How did I assume my boss or coworkers thought about me? How did I assume? How did I take and make meaning of the things they did? What was the impact, the way that I perceived, assumed, and then reacted upon it? How did that work for me? If I was going to be responsible for my reactions to my assumptions of how my boss was with me or coworkers or whomever was there. And then when I took myself to work every day, what did I think of myself? Did I take of myself as competent, as someone who was there, who was putting 100%? How did I feel about myself when I was there? Was I all full of myself, or was I ashamed? Did I feel low? What did I do to myself? Did I scold myself? Did I hold myself up high? Did I held courage? How did that way of being with myself really impact it? The way that I created that result. And part of all of that would show me what kind of core belief, individualistic beliefs, and negative and positive, that we take with us from childhood all over our life. And if they're positive ones that have been good for me, they've worked for me, there's my strengths, I can't keep them, and I move toward them. And if they're negative ones, such as maybe I'm bad, I'm good, not good for anything, I'm stupid, see, everybody found out, something that was, I kept from childhood and coming, then I want to go into the place of the memory. So I'll take that in my body. Memories are held in our body. Traumas are held in our body. I want to go to that place that is in my body, the feeling that comes to me when I say those things to myself, and allow that feeling, that thought process, and the space in my body to take me to those memories which I created and I said, I'm stupid, or whatever message was given to me by the world, and I took it in at that moment. And then try to heal that part of me. I survived it. I've grown up. I've had other strengths, and somehow come together. And in the exercise in the life, he said, go systematically teaching you how to do that, to take care of those wounds that you have created and have had from childhood. And even if other people created it, you kept on putting it back into yourself and not letting it go. To heal that point, bring your strength, integrate, That's why the name is awareness, or being aware of everything about yourself, and then integrating all those lost parts of you or separated parts of you that were traumatized, and then bringing them together. And as a whole unit, now make a decision. Maybe I don't. That position is lost. Maybe I can learn whatever I can learn and become complete with it, be confident again as I go to, you know, search for other jobs. Those are the pieces where I take full responsibility for the way I have been, and I can take full responsibility in the way I can shift and change myself in the world. And when I do that, I'm going to keep creating new results.
You know, what comes out of all of this, as you've been sharing this to me, is that for someone to do this takes a great deal of courage, because we hold inside of ourselves all of these things, not just the messages from the outside, and then we foster new messages based upon those, but also our memories. And you know, these are the memories that these are things that happen in our lives.
Yes.
And there are some things that, you know, we look back and we're, well, I'm not real proud of that. As a matter of fact, what's interesting, what comes to mind is I used to deliver the morning and evening newspapers in my area in Phoenix. And by the way, you mentioned Arizona State University, and one of my sisters went there. Actually, two of them went there. And so I'm somewhat familiar with Gamage and all of that area. But I was doing what they call a sales drive, where you go around to try to get subscriptions. And I was a great salesman. I mean, I won awards, and I would travel. We'd go to Disneyland. I went to Disneyland a couple of times. But for whatever reason, that evening, I was not doing well at all. And I went up and knocked on a door, and the gentleman answered the door. Oh, no, it was a woman who answered the door. And I started my spiel, and she just wasn't interested. And so I began to beg.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walked away from that door, without the sale, mind you, I felt so, I couldn't believe I had done that.
Yeah, you felt low.
Oh, man, did I feel low. And I was up on the second floor.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things that we don't want anybody else to know.
Yeah.
And yet, here's the interesting thing I learned when I was working for that religious station in Phoenix. I came to the realization, not that, you know, I'm necessarily better than anyone else, and, you know, my whole life is an open book per se. But, you know, if God knows, then what difference does it make if the other 7.5 billion people know? And besides, the majority of them don't care.
Yes.
They just don't, because they're too busy living their lives. And trying to survive and hopefully thrive. And that's kind of the direction that you are leading people through Life Reset, is to get to a point where they can thrive.
Yes.
You know, and then bring all of those wonderful good things through, that law of attraction, especially as far as how one feels about oneself. I have a feeling that probably has more to do with it than I want this and I want that.
Very much. I think that who we are to ourselves is what creates our identity, and it sources everything else and our relationship with others. And exactly what you said, the way that I can accept myself. You know, even if I don't like something about myself, accept that I don't like that behavior or way of things. You know, I have an addictive personality. I smoked cigarette for 30 years. Now I'm having issues with, you know, food, and I go back and forth between sugar. And the only reason I didn't get into drugs is because I was scared that I knew that I was such an attached personality that if I like something, mm-hmm. I'm going to have it for the rest of my life. So it was more of, I just don't like that part of me. Yeah. I know it. I don't like it that I sit here and talk to people about, you know, how to be restraining yourself and not do it, and the willpower. And then as I'm talking, my left hand puts a donut in my face. You know what I'm saying? It's like that part of me is still pretty much separated.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. So that part, it's the acceptance. Yes, I do have a part which is very impulsive, and I'm still managing to be friends, and you know, we can cooperate with each other, and that is my, that's still my struggle. But to accept that part of me, talk about it, not go through the shame, not go through all of those pieces, and, you know, become humorous about it, go toward the part of me that is an all-knowing, you know, righteous person, and the minute she comes out and she knows the whole world and gets upset and entitled, and start, you know, being fun with it and says, yes, Your Highness, you know, obviously everybody else didn't get the memo that you have sent out. So be accepting of even our own gremlins, and then put a focus on our strengths, on the areas that we know that it works. And this way, I'm not pushing away or denying the parts of me that still need work, the parts of me that still need to be integrated into a higher place of myself. And higher place, what I mean, what I say a higher place is, what anybody says a higher place is for them. I think everybody knows their own right and wrong. Everybody knows. Mm. And if we pretend we don't know, it's just that at that moment, it's maybe beneficial for some reason, short-term reason, to be in a space of saying that I'm not being my best, and it's okay that I'm not being my best. But internally, I know who I am at the in my best. And is the striving toward that, accepting the parts that are still not, consistently working on myself until the day I die, to just be a better human being. And better, I just mean for whomever, what they think that better is. But better does not mean that I go kill the world and just think that I'm better, because the world also has a say-so about it. Mm-hmm. I don't live in my own mirror only. I live in the mirror of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and that is the challenge that we all face, especially when we start looking at what's going on in the world.
Yes.
And how we want it to be different. How we you know, and I come more from an idealistic perspective than anything else, and it's like, what are you people all? I have to say that, and I go back 17 years or so, roughly 16 years. And I remember the events of the 11th of September of 2001. And I have to say that as I'm watching this unfold at, I think it was like, what was it, 5:36 o'clock in the morning, local time, one of the first thoughts in my head was, there's something not right here. We need to handle this differently.
Yes.
Than we've handled, and we didn't. We did it exactly the same way, exactly the same way as we always handle things like this. Now, granted, some would say, well, but this has never happened before. Well, in a manner of speaking, it has.
Yes.
And instead, and so I even started putting the question out, even then, has anybody sat down with these people to find out why they're so pissed off? What is it that's got them so bent out of shape that they feel that this is their, this is what they feel like they need to do to you know, get their message across or have their way, if that's the case? And you know, some people say, well, they don't want to listen. Has anybody asked? And then I go back to that television program I was sharing with you earlier. These two were just, matter of fact, this one guy who was on the island attacking the Navy, the naval vessel and its people, he had an army behind him. They were all wiped out except for him. We're talking hundreds, if not thousands of people. And you're sitting here going, what a freaking waste. If they had just sat down in the first place, all of this death and destruction could have been avoided.
Very much.
And we do, and if I'm not mistaken, have you elaborate on this, Fujian? We do that to ourselves.
Yes.
Because we deny certain parts of who and what we are, and it pops out and manifests in other ways, whether it be a lost job, whether it be cancer, whether it be any other things that we create in our lives due to our unwillingness to accept who we are. And, you know, to your point that you made earlier, I remember a conversation I was having with a Christian minister back then. And he was talking about, he was reading this one passage from the Bible about, you know, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I started looking at that. I'm going, perfect. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to just think about it. I didn't, wasn't looking up somebody's commentary or trying to define words. Okay, what is God? God isn't right or wrong, good or bad. God just is, right? And mm-hmm. as like it says in the Old Testament, I am that I am, right? I thought, well, then that's perfection. Perfection is just to be. Just to be. That's being perfect. And you know, if we could get to that space, then maybe we, as an individual, we could then sit down with our outer protagonists, if you will.
Yes.
And have a dialogue. Even if they haven't done that, at least we would be coming from that aware space.
Yes. I got to tell you this story. I'm into this conversation of, you know, who am I to kill another being? So even when animals are crawling all over my house or something, you know, I sit there and talk to them and allow them to, you know, kind of like remove themselves from my space and all of that. So one day, you know, I'm so happy about myself and I'm feeling so proud about myself of, oh, I didn't kill the ant, and I, you know, respectfully took it outside. So the next morning, I have like 10 other ants coming in. And then they all come in there, and I'm talking to them, and I'm, you know, getting a little bit annoyed, but I'm still saying, you know, I'm giving you a chance. I would like you to move along. And I did all of those stuff with creating the white space so they can go out and all of that. So the next day, my whole bathroom is filled with ants. So suddenly, this human being who was so proud of herself, of, you know, working with another being and not wanting to kill them and wanting to be peaceful, I went and got the Windex and I did this mass murdering all over my, you know, my bathroom. And I'm cleaning and angry and, you know, even blaming them. Like, I gave you the chance to not commit suicide and you chose to commit suicide. And I'm having all this, you know, fun dialogue with myself. And then at one point, I'm like, what happened to you, Fushan? Like, what was the breaking point of love / rage?
Yeah.
What was that breaking point? And then I went along and looked at, you know, my own marriages or when I got divorced or married people who come to me in my office and with totally amazing amount of love, they come together. And at one point, it breaks. What is that day that you suddenly say, that's it, and I'm going after your throat in divorce and not letting you even, you know, get up? What happens when, you know, when there's something going on, we all help and we go and, you know, pay money and have people go and help refugees and create camps for them, and then suddenly you're all out, you're bad, you got to get out, you're this, you're that. What happens to us that there is each one of us has that breaking point. Each one of us has the good and bad. Each one of us has both side of the, you know, the angel and the archangel and the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it in each one of us that flips us from one to the other? And I think that the answer to that question is important for us. And not for anybody else, but for us. Because if I know where that line is, and if I can just build tolerance more and more about how to create that tolerance for myself and understanding and compassion and, you know, like you said, through dialogue, through learning, through reading, through look at the opposite sides, everything that comes about, for me to create a larger allowance of tolerance for other human beings to be who they are, and it starts with me to also tolerate the place I am. And this was biggest learning for myself in the experiential level where, wow, you know, we could all toot our own horn and say, wow, I'm great, I'm greater, I can be. But when it comes in action, where is the line that I go from the angel to the devil in a millisecond in my action and justify it heavily in our own mind with our own stories and not be responsible for the impact that we have around the world.
Yeah, it's and we just went through probably one of the most tumultuous, they've actually done some research on this, election campaigns that this nation has ever seen.
Yes.
Some of the banana republics and their coups were a party by comparison, because the attitude on the part of the various factions basically has been, and in some cases still is, I wish the other side were dead.
Yeah,
gone.
That's harsh.
Wiped from the earth, because they are the problem. And I remember talking with a programmer who had he was a very conservative individual, and he had so many nice things to say about the other side. And off the air, I asked him, I says, first of all, did you ever consider the possibility that you owe the other side a debt of thanks? Because if it weren't for them, you'd have nothing to talk about? And he gave me a bewildered look. And then the other side, then the other thing I said to him, I says, and don't you think that you're partly responsible for the problems you're blaming them for? Because you and your side didn't get out the vote to make sure that your people were elected?
Yeah.
So how is it just their fault? I mean, if we're going to go down that particular rabbit hole. And so I mean, I have to tell you that I didn't care at all until September of 2016. And somehow I got too close to the vortex and I got sucked in for the next 5 months.
Yeah.
And I have to say it was a very, in spite of the fact that I tried pulling myself out, for 5 months. And finally I got to a place in January of 2017, where I finally realized, you know what? I don't care anymore. There was a point at which we all thought, okay, this process is over. We can all take a breath. And we couldn't.
Right.
We were not allowed to take a breath. Now, in the broadcast industry, when a commercial is created, for example, especially radio commercial, you do not want a 30-second commercial to be a run-on sentence where it's just constant words, one right after the other. You want a little break to give the listener's mind a chance to take a breath. But we didn't get that in November or December or January. And for some folks, they haven't taken a breath yet.
Yes.
And people have become exhausted and frustrated over that exhaustion. You know, and I have to say that I was actually able to make peace with the whole thing by realizing several different elements about what had happened. And, and it's like, you know what? If this comes to an end sooner than 4 years, then that's what's going to happen. And if it doesn't, then that's what's going to happen. And if it doesn't end in four, it'll go to eight. Who knows? The reality is that unless I get control of my perception of what's going on and what's important in my life, that's why I bring it home again.
Yeah.
I live in a rural part above Santa Barbara. I've had the ant infestation you speak of. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
We also have all kinds of other critters, from insects on up. I mean, we've had a bear on the property. We've had deer. We've had bobcats, we have dogs and cats. Cats are indoors and the dogs are indoor-outdoor. And so we have these, I have to say, this wonderful experience with blue jays. My wife feeds them peanuts every day. So we have that wonderful connection with nature. And then one of the things that's said many times on this program, and you feel free if you want to add to the chorus, that when we reconnect with nature, even if it's a park in the middle of New York City, if we will just reconnect in some way, it helps us and it grounds us, it centers us. And helps our awareness, helps our perspective.
Yes. I used to walk with this amazing lady, and every time we walked, she just kind of looked around and took anything that was sharp in the middle of the road out. And I kept saying, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Well, that's a nail. That's a glass. Somebody's going to go with their tire and they're going to cut their tire." And I looked at her and was like, "Wow, that's an amazing awareness and responsibility to your surrounding." And she says, "Yes, but that's what I can do today. I can talk to you and I can do this." This brought a lot for me where even, you know, I wasn't in Iran when the Arab Revolution happened. I was in the United States, but with my mouth open to the floor in a shock. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened also in January or November. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that brought for me is I'm not in control of the result, but I have also left my responsibility about all the small pieces that finally gets that result. I'm not part of the politics that happens around me. I'm not part of responsibility of the nature that is around me to take the vote that is in the middle, to go to vote appropriately toward my senators or my congressmen and women and everybody to get to that place. I just sit back, relaxed, wait for the world to hand it to me the way I want it, because if it doesn't hand it to me the way I want it, then I'll be really upset and blame the whole world. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, I just want to close my eyes and have the magical wand, and with one vote that I create in, you know, one Tuesday morning, think that it should just be changed because I started it.
Yeah.
And I went Tuesday morning and I, you know, voted for so-and-so. And it dawned on me, like, no, I'm not being responsible for the politics. I'm not being responsible for the, you know, the country that I'm living in for so long. Or, you know, if I'm dual citizen for both countries. I'm just not. And maybe if I'm having something to say and I live in these pieces, then I need to be responsible and accountable for the smaller steps until I create that result. And I think that's part of the piece that I was talking about, that where is it our individual accountability in all of this? Because if individually I will do my best, then I've done my best. And yes, it doesn't mean that I, you know, I can't be that narcissistic to think that if I individually have done my best, I change the result for the world. But if I do it at least mine, I will get it closer to whatever the mass thinks that it should be, to the best that it's going to go, or at least take my, what I would like, my agenda forward. And I think that's part of the notion that I saw from afar when I saw the revolution in Iran happen. And even here, I saw the same thing with the, you know, debates and things that, the emotions that were going up.
Well, I have to say that it's one of those things that I actually actively sought out because I couldn't continue that way. I just, well, that's not me. I'm a very optimistic and idealistic person, you know, because when something happens, I go, wait a minute, that didn't make any sense. Why would they do that when that? And they say, look, that's just what they did. And so, you know, I've been here a scant 57 years, mm-hmm. You know, puff of smoke, barely a puff of smoke in the eternity of this universe. And, you know, the puff of smoke's going to go out before you know it, and it's not going to matter.
Yes.
Not to me, because I'm not going to be here anymore.
Yes. And even to other people, probably about 2 months or, you know, extreme 6 months.
Yeah.
And will just be a good memory and a picture.
Yeah, exactly. and so I think that one of the things that I'm learning as I'm going through this process of life is where do I want to be? Where do I want to be centered? And I speak more spiritually, more metaphysically in that context, because, again, what happens on the inside is then what's manifested on the outside. And, You know, and it's really true. That's why I encourage everybody. We've had programs. We've talked with people, Fujian, where we encourage people to focus on themselves. And this is with a small s, mind you, self-centeredness, on their family, on their community. That's where your energies should be focused, not on what's going on over there on the East Coast or over there in the Middle East or over there in China or wherever else you want to focus your attentions that cause you consternation, that cause you frustration. Let that go. There's nothing you can do about it. And if you can do anything, do something if you feel led to do so. Otherwise, leave it alone because it just, I don't know. I've struggled with it for years. I stick my nose in places where maybe I shouldn't, you know, intellectually.
Was it the sentence that says think globally, act locally?
Yeah.
Like you have a knowledge base about all of it and the news and what's going on and, you know, and they have a special experience. I think it's the beauty is that now that we go on vacation or, I mean, I live in Los Angeles or, you know, wherever you go, there is such a wealth of diversity with so much experience of me just asking questions of people and their ideas and what they believe. Mm-hmm. I gain so much about what the world looks like or, you know, the news media, the different types of news media to look at all aspects of it. But then, like you said, come back and look at what is it that I can actually make a difference personally in my surrounding and in the people who I am dealing with every day in my community.
My present wife has worked for, I'm going to say almost 40 years or more in the area of cardiology with cardiologists. She is not a cardiologist, but boy, I tell you what, she's certainly got the knowledge. And there have been times when she would come home feeling like she accomplished nothing. But yet over the course of time, she's telling me these stories of certain patients, never any names mentioned, who came in, they recognized her, they were so glad to see her, they felt good around her, and so on and so forth. She's mentioned certain dignitaries that she has facilitated healthcare in that department for, and so on and so forth. And I remind her, I use this example, that you may have had a businessman who got up on the wrong side of the bed, came to the cardiology department, met with you and the cardiologist, and you focused on him, giving him the best patient care you could, and he left there with a whole different attitude, and he was headed for a meeting. And if he had left for that meeting with the same attitude he'd walked into cardiology with, that meeting could have gone a totally different direction.
Yes.
Now, we don't know what our influence is. What we do know is what our influence can be on each individual that comes into our lives. And it really goes to what you've been talking about in terms of, you know, again, fostering that awareness of self, changing the perspective, changing that awareness to have a whole different attitude, an emotional expression, if you will, or experience.
I cannot change anything outside of me.
Right.
Only by changing my behavior toward the outside. That's the only way I can influence. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I can change my behavior is to be aware of the thought and the emotion that creates that behavior. And then I'll do it and then I'll test it because I'll have an intention. I want to create that intention. If it works out, awesome, it worked. If it didn't work out, I got to come back again and look at how did I think? How did I feel? How did I behave? And then shift it again and then try it out again and again and again. So ultimately, we cannot make a difference in the world unless we're aware of these three components that come from us and that we actually have some control over. It's been a joy to be able to speak with you and your audience today.
I am so thankful that we've had the opportunity to have you on the program. We're going to take another shot at getting you in studio. So should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to do that and continue this conversation.
Any Monday, Tuesday, Mondays, or Fridays, you tell me, I'll be there.
Okay.
I promise.
Very good.
Even a Sunday.
Wonderful. Well, before we let you go, two things. A reminder to our listeners, Foojaan.com, Foojaan.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. That's the title of the book. Before we let you go, three final questions that we give to all of our guests here on the program. And the first one is, who is Foojaan Zane?
I'm a loving human being. That I can claim I am. I have a doctorate in clinical psych. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm also a life coach and an author and a speaker. I go around the world and speak about humanity and human.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I really wish and hope for 7.5 billion people to be accepting of themselves. And that's why I created this mechanism or the tool for them to heal themselves. I think everybody deserves to be whole. And just having the tool to be able to do that, to accept themselves. And I think I know it's a cliche, but it really is true. As long as you haven't accepted all of you, even the gremlins, it's very hard to accept other people's gremlins. So to be able to have 7.5 billion people to have access to this tool and be able to use it to heal.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Is to make a difference, an impactful, positive difference in everybody's life. Every single person who I come across, whether it was with my words or with personally, I come to give them a positive experience about who they are, not necessarily about who I am, but about who they are. And I know that I'm constantly in that challenge, that at any moment that I'm not my best and I come across, I look at myself and I try. Sometimes I lose opportunities and I'm not the best and I don't bring out the best in people. But that's my striving. This is what my purpose is, to be able to create that for myself and everyone that I come across.
Well, Foojaan Zane, again, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Author of Life Reset, and we encourage you to go to Foojaan.com, Foojaan.com. We will be linked to your website as well, Foojaan. And again, thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us. And we do look forward to having you back on the program.
Thank you, Richard. Thank all of you who are listening. And it's been a joy, and I hope to be with you again.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.